Lakers have a playoff race that they're very heavily focused on. You know, they have, I think it's 18, 17 games left.
You got to win tomorrow.
Yeah, we got the Memphis Grizzlies, which are also in their own little bit of a pickle right now. And the only team that's, you could say, safe all the way right now in the West is the Nuggets, yes.
Right. And you guys called me crazy when I said that that team can actually make it all the way.
We're still a long way from all the way.
You know who they just signed?
Yes, who?
Carmelo Anthony.
Really?
Just you're lying. The threes?
No, I said that's who they should sign.
Oh they like, should.
I was like, they just signed Carmelo Anthony.
Breaking news.
What? Okay.
You know how he used to play?
But yeah, that's where he got drafted and everything like that.
But yeah.
With the Lakers, though, they have beat now the Mavericks.
Yes.
They beat also the
Golden State Warriors.
They beat the what's it called? The Thunder. We lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yeah.
Did you turn off the TV, Byron? Can you move the mouse real quick? Sorry. Yeah, there it is. But yeah, the screens went black and it scared me. I was like, oh snap. But you know, it kind of scared me, like when, you know, LeBron is out of a sudden, he's in a fucking boot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, he got injured during that Mavs game.
Yeah, exactly. And
he kept playing through it.
Yeah.
He just taped it up.
Yeah.
Crazy guy.
So, you know, the Lakers are going through right now where they're playing all these teams that are right there, right next to them in as far as, you know, the win-loss column. Like you said, tomorrow the Grizzlies are especially with no John Morant because, you know, his whole, you know, scandal going on with what he did on IG Live and other stuff.
It's been building up.
Mm-hmm.
It's been building up so scenario right now, after scenario.
It's in the Lakers' favor, especially the way that they just played against the Warriors yesterday. AD had 39 points, and he just shows that he can still take over a game, obviously bearing injury. And the rest of the team is, you know, looking pretty good.
The
team
is solid, man. You know, the guys around this time can actually defend. They're young, can actually shoot. Exactly, yep. Like, it's a very solid team.
Yeah, I saw this one play yesterday.
Dennis yesterday, bro. Uh-huh. Dennis. I got to say, bro, as a point guard, he was carrying that team.
Yeah, and there was yesterday a play where they moved the ball around so beautifully where it just left Austin Reeves wide open for a three. And those are the type of plays that I haven't seen the Lakers have for such a long time. So I'm glad to seeing this progress. And again, with 17, 18 games left, they really just have to press the gas, man, and go all in. And hopefully, D'Lo didn't play yesterday, right?
No, he didn't.
So that's going to be a
once
big thing.
Once he comes back, that's another thing, too.
You know?
That's going to help them.
So right now, the Lakers tomorrow, as we're saying, they got the Grizzlies. After that, they have the Raptors. And the team after that has been playing really good. They just won yesterday in double overtime. The New York Knicks are on a 9-game winning streak. So the Lakers will be seeing them March 12th here in LA. So that to me is a must win because it's an Eastern team. It doesn't affect, again, the seeding as much as like it's not a tiebreaker or something like that when it comes to the Western
team. You
teams.
Still need that win.
But you need that win no matter what. So the Knicks are so important to beat. And after that, we got the Pelicans, Rockets, Mavs, Magic. The next big, big challenge, I feel, is going to be the Mavericks on March 17th. I'm not going to say that they're not a good team or nothing like that. But the Lakers are set to play the Suns on March 22nd. And
is that a Laker game? Here in LA?
Yeah, here in LA. You know, and then
these
after
guys are going to show off.
Yeah, and the way, and even
did you see that face off between Luka and Devin Booker, where Devin Booker was trying to get Luka to get riled up?
No, I didn't see that one. Actually.
And Luka was like, "Well, if you want to do that, like next time, don't start that when there's 3 seconds on the clock." You know?
Yeah.
I was like, "Damn!" Luka was like, "Bring that heat before the game ends, bro."
Yeah.
Yeah, bro. Like they had the whole team had to step in and like separate them, bro. But mm-hmm. Booker is the one instigating, and I was like, "Damn, why you trying to instigate Luka, bro?"
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, there's no reason to do that.
Yeah, and
that's another player that like I like him, but I don't like the fact that he's trying to act hard, bro. Like I'm like, why you trying to act hard, bro? Just do your thing.
Yeah, and I don't know. The league is so soft anyway. That's why anytime I see someone trying to act hard, it's like, man, the league is so soft anyway. And that's why, honestly, too, we're going to talk about this guy right now. Seeing Ja Morant doing all the stuff that he's doing, honestly,
throwing his future away.
I don't want to sound like a hater or nothing.
Yeah.
But when this guy came into the league and everything like that,
he was one of my favorites.
Great player.
He still is. Like, I like him.
But there was always something about him for me personally that I was like, man, there's something about this dude that is, I don't want to say rubs me the wrong way, but I'm like, I don't know. There's just something about him that
you felt the facade.
Not really the facade, but it was just like, I feel like while his career goes, we're going to kind of see really what he's about. You know what I mean? What I could say really made me feel that way was when I'm seeing this guy fly through the air and all this stuff, it gives me vibes of like Derrick Rose type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Derrick Rose was doing similar things as this guy was doing in the sense that, you know, this guy was just, the way that he would just attack the rim, it was like vicious, man. Mm-hmm. And Ja Morant's doing that too. And what I thought about it was just like, man, this guy, if he plays like this, he can be like Derrick Rose in the sense that, you know, injuries are going to catch up to him because of how hard he's attacking the rim and all this stuff. The difference between him and Derrick Rose is that Derrick Rose, don't know how he can shoot in the mid-range and all that stuff, but Ja Morant hits the three. You know what I mean? He has a different type of range and all that type of stuff. So I was like, you know, he could, you know, in a sense, bar injury, but with that shot, he's going to have a longer career at the same time. You know what I mean? Because I feel like if you have a good jump shot, you'll have a really good long career in the NBA. That's what got Kobe throughout, you know, even through his injuries and all that stuff. He still couldn't go, you know, hard to the rim, but he could still shoot the ball. You know what I mean? And that part of him couldn't go away. But Ja Morant in that aspect is what I was like. You know, I just feel like we're going to see again what his career comes if he transitions his game and all that type of stuff. And then we started hearing about this other stuff about, the first thing I heard was when they played the Pacers and then they pointed what they said, a laser.
Into
another vehicle. And it's like, and he was the passenger in that vehicle, Ja Morant. And, you know, you get those things and it's like, you don't know what that laser's coming from. It could just be a laser pointer, bro. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you don't know what it could or couldn't be. And just putting that out there, especially the day and age that we're living in the USA, you don't want to do that type of stuff, you know what I mean? And then you hear about that. You hear about him just acting like...
beating up a 17-year-old, flashing a gun. Yeah.
But even before that, like, I was hearing things about him just acting... just like China, if he's good
in the NBA,
and all this type of stuff, the people he was, his posse that he was rolling around. I'm gonna say posse because a posse does this type of shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A circle, a more of a, like what we have right here within the podcast. You know, a group of friends, of brothers, you could say, they gonna stir you in the right direction. Kind of like what Byron posted today or sent to us. You know what I mean? Your inner circle is either gonna feel like a cage because they're keeping you there, or you're gonna feel like, you know,
you're inspired and motivated
because you're around people that do that for you, and that's where when I start hearing these things, I'm like, Ja Morant's gonna flush his career down the toilet because of the people he's surrounding himself with. And what trips me out more is that almost just about every game I see, his dad's right there with him. So I'm like, is his dad co-signing this? You know, and his dad's not
telling him anything.
Yeah, and his dad's not hood either, bro. His dad is, from what I understand,
He tried to hood with Shane and Shire, bro.
Get out of here, bro. you know, from what it seems like, he's a blue-collar worker, you know, family
man,
all this type
of stuff.
Are you
trying to go up to Shannon?
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, again, you're acting like that.
His dad, bro.
His dad was trying to You're setting the example for your 23-year-old son who, you know... isn't just a really good basketball player. This guy's a superstar. This guy has a signature shoe with Nike. And then goes on IG Live and is flashing a gun in the state of Colorado where, you know, in each state you go to, there's different laws. Mm-hmm. All that type of stuff. And it's like Colorado, I don't know if it's an open carry state or anything like that, but all those things matter. And it's like, you're talking about that. You flash a gun...
The big issue is that he's drunk and he's flashing a gun, so
that and then
misuse can happen.
Another thing too is you're part of an NBA team. So is that gun in your possession while you're on the flight with the team, while you're in the hotel, while you're in the locker room? You know, the last person that brought a gun into the NBA and into the locker room, Gilbert Arenas for the Wizards, 50-game suspension. You know what I mean? So it's like there's also levels as to, you know, the punishment goes.
The severity,
you know
what I mean? Of it.
Like, obviously, the Memphis Grizzlies didn't really do anything about it in the sense that...
He got a two-match ban.
No, he didn't get a ban, bro. He stepped away from the team.
He decided to be out for 2 games?
He didn't get suspended, bro. He released a statement saying, I'm going to seek help, this and that, all that type of stuff.
So he
But got, the he, Memphis at no point said, we're suspending you for 2 games for this reason.
Okay.
He stepped away on, you can say mm-hmm. his voluntary terms. He released a statement and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. He deactivated his accounts.
All that type of things, you know? But then, you know, again, there's going to be more ramifications because you have a police investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and now, again, the team didn't do anything, so now it's in the NBA hands. Adam Silver is now going to be
dictating his punishment.
Yeah, and faced with what is he going to do because they call him more of a player's commissioner. While with David Stern would throw the book at you in the sense, even though he was, you know, not letting Chris Paul be with the Lakers. That's another conversation. But David Stern would have probably already suspended him for X amount of games or, you know what I mean, type of stuff. Or the NBA would have said, he's out indefinitely pending this investigation, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So right now, you know, he has all that. And again, the debate right now that I've seen is he going to be back soon? Is he going to be back in a week? Is he going to be back in 2 weeks? Not this season? How severe is this? How serious is the league going to take this?
Yeah.
Given in the state of the age and where you have...
How does that affect his team? And how does that affect his chemistry with his teammates as well?
Yeah, because...
It's like, how does his teammates trust him now? Because now you're putting in jeopardy, like, the run. They were having a good run. And now you're putting in jeopardy that run because of your actions. So now it's
but
like...
But let me tell you this something right now, though, bro, at the same time. This team doesn't have a 30-year-old on that team. That mm-hmm. team is all 28 and younger.
Mm-hmm.
One of the youngest teams in the league. So it's like you have that dynamic too. So you don't have a bigger voice in the locker room. Also, like, they just got Danny Green, by the way, but he hasn't been there.
Yeah, as a vet
this whole time, mm-hmm. you know. So the it's very important as far as how the league is going to take this, because the league is either going to be like, you know, this is a rising star, we don't, you know, we want to sweep this under the rug type of stuff, and then he's out on the floor, you know, next week type of thing. Or they're like, you know, this is more serious. You know, especially, again, the day and age we live in is huge, because I've heard, if I'm not mistaken, there was a shooting in Memphis, too, within these last couple of days. So all these things going on, you're doing that. And again, you're an NBA player. You could easily be the next $250 million player, within his next contract. Again, the Nike shoe, all these things, and you're just putting it in jeopardy to, like... You know, and I don't get for what, you know,
he didn't
like
grow up in the hood.
None of that stuff.
He's not a hood kid, so it's like, why does he need to do that?
And then Paul Pierce came out today and said, you know, because Paul Pierce, I don't know if you ever heard about his story, but Paul Pierce, he got stabbed mm-hmm. pretty severely, and then he came back to the league, and, you know, he had a good, you know, career after that. But he said that after he got stabbed that he would walk around with a gun and you know, for his protection and all this stuff. But at the same time, you know, I get what he's saying. And he's like, oh, you know, you don't know what Ja's going through and all this type of stuff. I understand that. But what does that have to do with flashing a gun on IG Live? It doesn't seem like you're in danger or you're trying to protect yourself from somebody. You're just brandishing a weapon in a club.
And this is where I got to say, where's the, like... Like the manager that manages his life, or
his agent.
That person. No.
Usually your agent that's really.
No. What I mean is, you know how there's always in your circle, there's supposed to be that one person that's supposed to stop you from doing something dumb. And I'm wondering, who was that person that was supposed to be like, nah, bro, don't go live, you know, or like, nah, bro, don't do that. Like, who's that person that's supposed to be there, supposed to take care of you? Especially when you know you're getting intoxicated and you don't know what could happen. When you're intoxicated, you do dumb things. Mm-hmm. And this is a result of
getting intoxicated and doing a dumb thing. For me, that person's Byron.
For you, oh, what? Yeah, he's got to be sober all the time.
Fact. You know what I mean?
So that's what I mean, though. It's like, who is that person that's supposed to take care of him? And because every person, especially at that level, you have some. You're supposed to have someone like
yeah.
that. Someone that's correct. Supposed to kind of be that voice of reason when you want to do something dumb.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, who was the person that was supposed to be like, no, don't go on IG Live. Who's supposed to be looking out for him?
Yeah, and again, I just feel like that group of people he's around is just all those people. They're not none of those people are those as that voice that's of reason. You know what I mean? We're gonna talk about another guy in a couple minutes that went through his own nickel tees and threw it all away in a sense. Obviously kept competing, but threw it all away in that aspect. Had to come back from a lot of stuff to now be where he's at. I'm talking about John Jones. Mm-hmm. John Jones went through a lot of stupid things, and he lost
his Nike deal.
He lost his Nike deal. He got his title stripped. You know, he got suspended at some point. And in the UFC embedded this past week, you know, there was something he was talking about where he was giving thanks to his current people he has around him and all that stuff. He was just saying how, like, previously he felt like he had people around him that weren't steering him correctly and all that stuff. So, yeah, the people you surround yourself, bro. Matters. That's why that saying that they say that my mom and your parents.
Tell me who you're with. I'll tell you who you are.
Yeah. Everybody who's listening to this has heard that, you know. It's off bat. So, John Morant.
But that's not me.
Oh, yeah. Exactly right. All right.
That's them.
John Morant, you know, again, I think that pending this investigation and all this stuff, luckily, bro, nobody was hurt.
That's a positive.
All that type of stuff. Yeah. You know,
that we know of. Exactly. You know, because
and
investigations are investigations, yeah. And who knows what might be revealed.
You know, at this point, it just really depends on if there's any evidence of him actually, like, because exactly, if you go to...
Because he's been, at least on social media, he's been accused of... Hitting a 17-year-old.
Beating up a 17-year-old.
But where's the evidence of that?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. There's an investigation. Yeah. We don't know.
And that's why when we're talking earlier, the burden of proof is on, you know, the state or whatever, whoever is, you know. Mm-hmm. And the bigger thing is, for example, on that IG Live, how do you prove that he's drunk?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you get proof that he's drunk?
That
he's
actually drunk.
Unless somebody testifies, yeah, he was drinking that night.
Yeah.
You know?
And then again, you don't know who might say that.
Exactly.
It could be the person that was working there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
You know? So all those moving pieces is something that, again, and this is just, that's just the criminal aspect of it. You know, the NBA could still say, hey, you know, you didn't get accused of a crime or nothing. Let's say he clears that aspect. But you still made the league look bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where I'm torn, because do you think it would look bad on the league if they do punish John Morant, even though, like, let's say he doesn't break a law or anything. But he's still seeing
but they got to set an example at the end of the day.
But, again, do you because especially the NBA being such a player-driven league, mm-hmm. Do you think it would hurt their image if they
I don't think it would, because you got to set an example for other people. I mean, if you don't set an example, if you don't set the bar, right, and you allow him to get away with it, and it's unfortunate to say that, it's actions have consequences.
Okay, so now the next question is, what's the right punishment, if you will, from the league? Does he get to come back after 5 games, 8 games, or is it a bigger deal where it's like, you know?
Well, it all depends on how it goes with the authorities in order to determine that, you mm-hmm. know? Like, they have to see, all right, what happens with the police investigation
In this hypothetical, no laws were broken.
Okay.
But still, you flashed a gun on IG, mm-hmm. you went through this whole thing. Do you think that it would be wrong of the league to suspend him?
For the whole season?
No, just to suspend him in general, given that there's no proof. He's basically cleared of all charges or anything like that.
No, nah, they should still set an example. He flashed a gun.
Again, okay, so in the example...
Because in the first of all, this is what we're forgetting, right? You are an employee at the end of the day. It's not like you're exempt from being an employee. At the end of the day, you are an employee and you represent an organization. And the image that you portray to the world of that organization matters. So you didn't harm anybody. That's good. But you still showed something that you shouldn't have done. Mm-hmm. Something that you know that image tarnishes not only you, it tarnishes your team, it tarnishes your family, it tarnishes the organization you represent. So yes, the organization is going to take steps to be like, well, we got to punish you in this way.
Okay.
Whether it be suspending for five games, whether it be, you know, something different.
And what do you think is the viable option here, or the viable time in suspension? You think it should be a little bit of short amount of games, 5-game suspension, or should it be, hey, you're not playing the rest of the season this season?
For me, I would say something short if he's cleared of everything. Like, I don't see the reason why he should be out of the whole entire season.
Okay.
If he's cleared of every single thing. But at the end of the day, like, the hard thing is you still need to set an example to other players. Mm-hmm. You can't allow him to get away with it, because then up-and-coming prospects, up-and-coming teens that are coming into the league, they also have to know, like, hey, you can't be acting like this.
Yes.
You can't be doing this. Like, this is bad for your image.
Yes.
So, which, I mean, in a sense, it's kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Any person would be like, yeah, you shouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. This is the other thing where it would be different.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you a scenario where it would be valid for him to have a gun. If he was in a shooting range. If he did an IG live, like, hey, I'm getting training here at shooting range, and look how I shoot this gun. Different scenario. He's in an environment that's supposed to be safe, an environment where technically you can shoot a gun in there, right? And you have an instructor. He's not inebriated, right? he's supposed to be sober there, right?
Yeah.
So in that case, it doesn't tarnish the image, or it doesn't tarnish the business. Because all you're doing is, hey, I went to a location that's specified for this and I'm doing that there.
Yeah.
However, you are in a club, from my understanding, right? There are, you're shirtless in a club. You're going, yeah, while listening to a song, right? Like, even though it was a small time frame that, you know, that was shown, but I'm like, bro, there's a lot of things where you're like, yeah, you shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that was a very harsh one there, but. You know, we're going to see what happens with John Morant in the next couple of days. We will find out what's going to happen. The Colorado police will investigate that. And the NBA will do its diligence as well. And we shall find out. And we should also find out where the Lakers stand in a few days as well. But over the weekend, we had UFC 285 from Las Vegas T-Mobile Stadium. And yeah, it was a really good card from top to bottom. We saw people like Ian Garry win his fight. We also saw Duplessis, middleweight process. Yeah, he
beat Julian Marquez.
No. Duplessis is the one that beat Derek Brunson.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, you're right. Mm-hmm. I was confusing him with the other guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking of the prelim.
Yeah, the Canadian guy won. Yeah. Then we saw Cody Garbrandt in the feature prelim, and he had a pretty good showing. Compared to what we've seen, you know,
in the past, he
did his thing out there. We also saw, what was that?
Joe. I think what's his name? The wrestler kid. He was the opening. The wrestling white boy versus Jamie Pickett.
Oh, yeah. Bo Nickel, my bad. Yeah, that's exactly.
My bad, not Joe.
No, Bo Nickel, yeah, we saw his UFC debut and he dominated. We also saw Jeff Neal, who missed weight, fight Shavkat
Rachmanov. He gave up 30% of his purse.
Yeah, and still got a bonus at the end of the night because it was a really good fight. And then we had an upset. And then we crown someone to be officially the GOAT. No more questions asked. And there's something that I like that John Jones said about that this week. And he was like, you know, all these people can have a debate about, you know, pound for pound and all that stuff. He's like, I'm chasing something deep, bigger than that. He's like, I'm chasing greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this
so is he going to go down to 155, bro? I'm just messing with
you.
Yeah, he would die, bro.
Literally would. But,
I'm just trying to be really ridiculous on it.
No, you're good.
But, no, honestly, he came in and dominated Cito. And I just think Gon needs to get wrestling, bro. Like, if he... Khabib stated, hey, come to Dagestan, we'll train you. You can probably be champion, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it, because he does need that. His ground game.
And he said after Francis's fight.
He did.
He said that after the Francis fight, yeah.
But it's like, he's gotta get some ground game, bro. Like, his.
Yeah, because against John Jones, you're not beating John Jones without that. That's why John, like he said, it in this week, is that this is gonna be an easy fight for him,
mm-hmm.
the easiest fight at heavyweight for him. And I believed it because I didn't see Ciryl Gane having that. Oh, I'm a stop that takedown. Mm-hmm. And even if he did one or two,
he couldn't even do it against Francis. He's not going to do it against.
Yeah,
against John.
Yeah, even if he did stop one or two, it's, you know, John has that type of wrestling that it's almost like Khabib, where in the sense that he's going to find a spot to get mm-hmm. you. You know, even if he stands and strikes with you for 2 minutes, he's going to find a spot where you get comfortable and he's going to go for the takedown. He's
but
gonna
then
here
becomes the biggest question, right? Now that Francis Ngannou is gone, who is actual competition for John?
There's two fighters. And I believe that
Stipe?
I believe two fighters will give him that challenge and then John retires.
Okay.
Stipe Miocic, which he's going to fight next in July, we're hoping, at International Fight Week, and Curtis Blaydes.
You think Curtis Blaydes gives him a challenge?
Curtis Blaydes is the only true wrestler in the heavyweight division right now. True wrestler.
What position is he in?
Ranking probably. I know he's in the top five.
Let me look it up.
I know he's in the top five. But
because it's just, man, last time I saw Curtis Blaydes, he wasn't even like that high.
I want to say he's at least top five, if not ranked number six in the world.
Number four.
At heavyweight. There you go, number four. I think that Curtis Blaydes is the only one that can present that challenge to Jones because, mm-hmm. again, he's that true wrestler. The guy that actually Curtis Blaydes is about to fight, Sergey Pulvich, I think he's more of a striking guy. But to me, Curtis Blaydes is the only one besides Stipe that presents that challenge for him because Stipe could also wrestle.
Tom Aspinall, huh?
And Tom Aspinall's injured right now, so I don't see him.
Tai Tuivasa,
he gets destroyed by John Jones.
Yeah, Ciryl Gane destroyed.
Derek Lewis gets destroyed by John Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in that.
Alexander Volkov
gets destroyed by John Jones, bro.
Rozenstruik
gets destroyed by John Jones. Everybody in that division, bro. The only ones are Curtis Blaydes and Stipe Miocic. Curtis Blaydes, all he needs to do is win his next fight. And Stipe
Alexander
loses.
Alexander Romanov.
None of those guys, bro.
Let's see. Who's Sergey Pavlovich?
He's probably ranked in the top 10. He's the one that's fighting Curtis Blaydes next.
He's
in next month, I believe.
He fought Tai Tuivasa.
Yeah, he beat Tai Tuivasa.
Yeah.
Yeah, Pulvich, April 22nd.
He's fighting Blaydes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, he just needs to win that fight. And, you know, he has his thing. And this guy, Sergey Pulvich, is on a 3-fight win streak, all knockouts. You know?
Mm.
So, I see Curtis Blaydes, you know, standing up with this guy in the first couple minutes and then doing exactly what John Jones did. Taking him down, roughing him up, and Curtis, they call him Curtis Razor Blaydes because he has some vicious elbows too, bro.
He's on a 3-fight winning streak.
As well?
That's why I was like, I know this guy has lost recently.
His last loss was probably to Ngannou when he got knocked the fuck out.
Yeah.
That was literally probably his last loss.
Yeah, I'm like, that's why, like, right now when I'm trying to think of
loss was to Derek Lewis when he got knocked out.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, I remember.
But that was in 2021.
Yeah.
2 years ago now. Besides that, you know, he's won by decision against Jorginho Rozenstruik And then I has beat Tom Aspinall. I think that was the fight where Tom got injured too. So that's the only guy that I feel like can just be able to compete with Jones's wrestling. I'm not saying that he's going to go out here and, you know, dominate Jones or anything like that. The biggest challenge for me remains...
I don't see any, like... Steve Miocic is the only one that I can truly see.
Yeah.
I don't think Blades gives him that much issues, bro. I'm going to be honest with you.
The only reason I'm bringing up his name is because he's the only true wrestler within this top five that's going to face Jones in the next year or so. So I think that he's the only one that...
Like, Miocic, I believe it.
And I don't really say, like, presents
Miocic,
like...
Miocic even gave challenge to Ngannou.
And I don't want to say really, like, he's, like, presenting... Well, when Ngannou, dude, you just needed to weather that punch, which Stipe did for the most part, and then just take him down. And that's what I would have seen Jones do against, you know, Francis as well. But Curtis, again, I bring him up just because his wrestling pedigree is elite. And... That's Jones's, like, you know, that's his thing right now. And don't get me wrong, I still think that he could take the guy down, but, you know, he's just because that's his pedigree, he'll just have a better, more comfortable in those.
It'll be a more interesting.
Yeah,
fight.
You're not gonna see him like Ciryl Gane deer in the headlights type of thing. You know what I mean? So that's why I named those two fighters, and that's basically it. But we had a co-main event that was upset, you could say.
Yeah.
And, you know, Valentina Shevchenko had 9 title defenses before this fight.
Yep.
And that was her ninth title defense. And, you know, Alexa Grasso just did her thing. And
capitalized on a moment.
Exactly. And I chose Valentina to win. But when Grasso was walking out, I told you, I was like, this girl's about to win. You know, prior, I made my picks, put them on IG. But then when I saw her come out, I reminded myself of a couple of things. When we see a dominant title reign and what the pros and the cons are. And the first person that came to thought at the moment, as of the lately, would be Kamaru Usman.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other examples in the past. And one that's very, very big is Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva, he was, you could say, ahead of his competition by a lot. You know, he was just going through his competition to the point where he was toying with people to the point that Chris Weidman knocked him out, became the champion, fought again, and then broke his leg. You know what I mean? And that was a big thing that happened in Anderson Silva's career. So now we have Valentino, 9 title defenses, right? Her last fight, as we talked about, split decision with Talia Santos. And that fight... I want you to give me your take on that fight, bro.
Well, on that fight, I, you know, the word might not be proper for your definition, but I feel like Valentina got exposed in that fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because in all the fights prior to that Santos fight, Valentina was toying with people and taking them out, like, in the round that she wanted, how she wanted. She would dominate so quick that it was like, whoa. You know, like, who is out there that can challenge her? And this was the first girl for me that made her look human.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, not only made her look human, took her down in several rounds.
Yeah.
Took her down and had ground control on her for several rounds. I mean, several minutes. Valentina did defend against it, but it was hard for her to get up. It was hard for her to, like, get out of those positions. The cage control wasn't crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, she adjusted until, for me, she adjusted until the fourth and fifth round.
Was the third round where it changed, though, because that's where the headbutt happened.
Yeah.
Santos's eye starts to swell up.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened pretty early in the round.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that round was so crucial. And for sure, the first two rounds was 10-9 for Santos, you know what I mean? But that third round is where the whole fight changed and whatnot. And, you know, Valentina used it to her advantage, and she became the one that was dominant in the other
position. And she dominated, especially those last two rounds, dominated it completely.
You know?
But Santos, for me, just makes her look very, very human. And it makes it look obtainable.
Yeah.
Where it's like, man, if you can learn from the Santos fight, you might be able to beat her.
Mm-hmm.
which is kind of what you like, and that's why for me, when you have Grasso, Grasso's, I mean, she was doing very smart things. Valentina did not want to exchange with her.
That yeah, girl, and that's why to me, Grasso, her game plan going in there was to outstrike Valentina. Yeah. And she was doing it, bro, in the most aspect, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because Grasso was, her striking was beautiful.
Because in that second round, Valentina's takedowns were out of like, I don't want to be. Yeah, like not really desperation, but more like, bro, I'm not trying to be, I'd rather be in this position with her.
There were several times where she shot and like Grasso was just like, move out of the way. Like,
you know,
like she shot several times and they're like, all right, move out of the way. Like,
yeah. And one thing I didn't like about that second round was Valencia had a top position and the I was about to say the professor,
the ref,
the referee.
I think it was Herb Dean, right?
No, it wasn't Herb Dean. It was the other dude, the white dude. I forget
Mark?
His name. Mark Goddard. It was the other dude. I can't forget. Jason Herzog. Herzog. He stood them up, and I was like, bro, she was active on top, bro.
Yeah.
She wasn't just on top of her. She was throwing punches, throwing elbows. And then
you
and
have
stuff.
That punch that just lands on Grasso as he's telling him to stop.
Yeah. And, damn. Yeah. And the reason why I didn't want to say exposed was because, especially watching this fight and the way that Grasso fought, obviously she won by submission.
Yeah.
But the way that she fought,
she was switching from conventional to southpaw.
Yeah, her game plan was to strike with her. Mm-hmm. She was prepared to go wherever, but she was.
But she also has decent, not the greatest, but she has decent ground game.
Where she was able to capitalize was when Valentina made a mistake, but she
spinning
didn't
kick. Yeah.
She didn't.
And go backpacked her.
Yeah, she didn't go off and like take her down, single leg her, double leg her. No. Wasn't like that. She capitalized on a mistake, and that was for me jujitsu 101 right there, yeah. Bro.
She gave up her back on throwing a kick and she backpacked her,
like you said, yeah. And did the rear naked choke and whatnot. And that aspect, I feel like in a rematch, Valentina will be more calculated.
I think Valentina is going to destroy her in the next one.
Yeah, Valentina's going to. Yeah, and I just think that when we're talking about.
The thing is, Valentina never. Because that's the other thing. Grasso rarely fights southpaw.
Yeah.
And I believe Valentina was not expecting her to come out and do southpaw.
Yeah.
So the fact that she was doing that throughout the fight, and also like when you fight Valentina southpaw, then you eliminate her kicks.
Yeah.
Now she can't kick you the way she's used to kicking
you. Yeah.
So there's a lot of things where a lot of tools that she has get eliminated when you go southpaw against her.
Mm-hmm.
So, and she did not expect like, oh, this girl's gonna go southpaw.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously now you got to change your whole game plan.
Yeah, and when you're on that type of title run too, where you're just dominating your competition, there comes a point where kind of how we were saying, where she was so dominant, where she was choosing when to end the rounds and all that stuff and how to do it. There comes a point, bro, where the competition is so hungry for that title, and you're so used to the title that the competition starts to catch up to you. And that's what I feel like we saw in the Santos fight. I think she probably was like, I don't even know who this fighter is. You think anybody in the crowd knows who this fighter is? No.
We didn't know.
I'm going to go out there and take her out within the first couple rounds. That's how pretty sure her mentality was. And, you know, the competition was like, you know, I'm here to become a champion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the demeanor I got when I saw Grasso walk out. And another thing, too, whenever I saw... Once she, like, you know, took off her shirt and she, you know, she was in already her to ready to go into the fight. Bro, for that weight class, she has a wide back, bro. And that's all where the power comes from, you know, from your legs. And she has some big old thighs. I'm talking about Grasso.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a wide back. And that right there, when I saw it, I'm like, bro, she has power behind those punches.
Especially
right
for that flyweight.
You know? Yeah. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting thing, man. Right now, what we're seeing from Mexico is they're...
Well, we already talked, right? Three champs that we have right now.
Three champs right now. And their UFC PI is being built. It's supposed to be done in September around that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the magnitude that Mexico is about to have, I don't know if that's the right word, but the impact, better said, that Mexico and Mexican fighters and the UFC are about to have is about to be... It's something that, like, kind of what we're seeing when
because,
Izzy, Kamaru Usman, and Francis were all champions. Now we're seeing it, like, with the Mexican side, and it's like Mexican born champions: Yair Rodriguez, Brandon Moreno, Alexa Grasso.
The other one I want to see is Irene, bro.
Yeah,
she's a fighter that I love, and I hate that that fight against her in Nunez was canceled. And if they do that Mexico card, I hope they like Irene gets to fight on that
bro,
one.
Bro, imagine four title fights, bro, in Mexico, bro.
I'm telling you, Irene was supposed to fight. I know, Amanda, but imagine
that four title fights, bro. We Brandon defends and Yair gets to unify there. Alexa fights Valentina again there, and you have Irene fight Nunes, bro. Four title fights, bro.
It's a pipe dream, but it's amazing if it.
I think they at least put three on there. At least three.
Yeah.
You know, I think they'll do. I think they'll do Brandon, Valentina, and Nunes, but they'll do the Yair and Volkanovski one. Like, they'll try to make that one separate, but
because that's interim.
But still, they're unifying still a title. You know what I mean? And he's still a champion regardless. You know what I mean? So yeah, man, the UFC in that aspect was very interesting this week, man. This the rest of the month is gonna be great. We have. Peter Yan versus Marab this weekend coming up. After that, we have live from London. We'll have Leon Edwards facing Kamaru Usman for the third time.
Yep.
And after that, or in that same card, Justin Gaethje, Rafael Fiziev, great fight. After that, we have Corey Sandhagen fighting Chito Vera, good fight as well. Then towards the end of the month, I'm not sure who else is going to be that, but I know that we go into Adesanya. Versus Pereira in Vegas, which I heard they haven't been in Vegas in like, they're going to Miami for that fight, and I heard they haven't been in Miami in like 20 years, for the UFC at least. They've been to Florida, but not to Miami.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And this is going to be the same.
Because I was like, I know that they...
Yeah, they've been in Florida.
I was like, I remember they fought close to one of the stadiums.
Yeah, so after that Vera Sandhagen, it'll be UFC 287 in Miami, and we'll also have Gilbert Burns... fighting in the hometown of the one and only Jorge Masvidal.
Oof.
That's going to be a good one.
That's going to be a good one.
We also on that same card, we have Kevin Holland fighting Santiago Pozniba. That one dude, Raul Rosas Jr., the 18-year-old at the moment. Really, really good fights on that card. The one right after that, too, Holloway versus Arnold Allen. So the UFC is just blessing us from now till, you know, April 15th, April 22nd, when we see Curtis Blaydes fight. I'm so excited. And well, at the same time, like with this past weekend, we saw, you know, Conor came out and hyped up the crowd, and then they filmed part of their Roadhouse movie with Jake Gyllenhaal. And then on the actual fight, we saw Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, go inside the cage, do the whole thing.
They used the crowd.
Did you see that, Byron, at all on social media when Jake Gyllenhaal goes inside the, and they like they filmed the part of the movie.
Yeah, and he does the flying knee.
Yeah. And then he keeps hitting the guy. He pushes the ref off. And all that.
But before that, he gets he's like along against the wall, not the wall, the cage.
Yeah, getting hit. Yeah,
acting like he's getting hit.
Those fake hits.
Question. Are you guys down? Are you guys interested in watching this movie?
I would stream it.
I heard it's a remake of Roadhouse. That was the name of the movie.
Never seen it.
Yeah, where the guy from Ghost comes out, I believe.
Ghost.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have to
do the movie Ghost.
I'll be down to go watch this movie. I mean, I only really go to the theaters if it's like Marvel movies. Like I'm honestly at the same time trying to go watch Creed 3. Even if it's at the theaters. So honestly, bro, ever since like the pandemic kind of ended and all that stuff, I'm more down to go see something like at the theater than to stream it. Just because it's like we get to do
different experience.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I have like a membership to a certain theater, and you know, it's worth it, so I'm gonna go use it and whatnot. Yeah. But you know, something happened last week, happened this weekend, and you know, we gotta talk about that too.
What?
So, last week, two teams faced off, Manchester United and Barcelona. Mm-hmm. In the Europa League.
You really want to bring this pain right now.
Europa League, yes, sir.
Ah, damn.
So the
he's trying to break my heart, ladies.
Barcelona lost to Manchester United in the Europa League. So just put it in the same context. Barcelona isn't in the Champions League. Now is eliminated by Manchester United. But they might be back in the Champions League because, you know,
they're since the top of the league.
In the league right now, yeah. Right? Correct. Cool. But on Sunday, I was Manny, you know, we're doing our work and everything like that. And I look over and I see his phone. And I see he's watching Liverpool versus Manchester United. I'm like, bomb, Sunday, English Premier League, cool. And I see the score, and it's 1-0 Liverpool. And I'm like, cool, dope. You know what I mean? Like, still a game, you know, first half. Yeah, anything can happen. You know what I mean? Type of stuff. Anything can happen. So then, you know, time passes and everything like that. And then I'm next to Manny again. He's still on his phone. And I kind of see him scratching his head. And I'm like, I look over, and now the score is 6-0 Liverpool. And I'm like, bro, what happened? Like, how did this happen? Like, I turned my head away for a second, and I look back, and it's like 6-0. And then, like, a few minutes later, 7-0. And then at this point, Manny's like, here comes the eighth one. And luckily, it didn't come, but fuck. 7-0, bro, at Anfield Stadium,
I literally
bro.
Felt the eighth one was coming.
And then, just to finish the story, and then the other guy, Josue, who he's a Real Madrid dick writer, I'm going to say it. I don't care. It's my podcast. I'm going to say whatever I want. You know what I mean? He's over here like, oh, so Real Madrid's the best because they beat Liverpool and Anfield. I'm like, shut up, bro. Shut up. Football's corrupt. But yes. Tell me how you feel about that, Manny.
Angry. I wanted to throw my phone. I'm glad that the Lord puts, you know, other spirits while I'm at church. So I don't react. No, I'm well, you know me, bro. I'm emotional. If anybody that watches a game with me, they know I'm emotional when it comes to the game. Like, I'm very emotional. I'm very like right now I'm calm because I'm like, I'm already over it. It already happened. It was what it was. But while I'm watching a game, I'm very emotional. I'm very like, damn, like, why did they do this? Why were these decisions taken? Like, I don't understand why this is happening. And one of the first things that I noticed, like, that made me question were the players the coach chose, the tactics that he was going with. It made me question a lot, like, what are they trying to do? Like, why is he trying to do this? Yeah. Like, there was three players on the floor, well, on the pitch, that for me shouldn't have been there. Number one, I don't understand why you put Bruno to play on the left wing. Bruno hasn't played on the left wing all season. And then today, the day you're facing Liverpool, you're going to play Bruno on the left wing.
Yeah.
Make no sense whatsoever. You're going to play Weghorst as a number 10. Which has helped you in the past. But once again, you're playing Liverpool. There's no reason why you should be doing this.
It's just another stadium, bro.
And then the other one was Dalot, which is the right back. And I was like, why are you playing Dalot when Aaron Wan-Bissaka has had a better game? And Aaron Wan-Bissaka was in the bench. Like, those three players, I did not understand that. One, because... For example, the right back from Liverpool, which is Trent. Trent is not good at defending when he has a fast forward in front of him. He always messes up. So if he would have put Rashford on the left wing, he would have been exposing Trent. And it's like, why do you put Bruno, who's slower and who can't expose Trent like that?
So do you think this has anything to do with the fact that they had a game earlier in the week?
We'll get to that. First, I want to just explain this nonsense.
No, definitely. You know, but the fact
the first goal,
the fact that you have two games in 1 week, and
it's more than that.
Players that you're talking about.
Yeah.
For example, these three substitutions, did they play against Barcelona? Or these guys
they all played against Barcelona.
What about the other guys that they subbed for per usual? Like, for example, these changes that you were talking about, were they the same things that were used for Barcelona?
I'll answer your question without going so much around it. Yes, the squad needs depth. It doesn't have depth to handle these many games. Even Vidane has come out and said that before this game, he said our schedule is very heavy and the turnaround time is too crazy. Like, we have too many games. And a lot of players have complained about having too many games. I remember in January, we literally had three games in 1 week. And for some miracle, like, we were able to get through that. And the league even came out and apologized to Man U for stacking their games like that. They're like, oh, we apologize for stacking your games like that. It's too close to one another. Because there's no, the team doesn't have enough depth yet.
This is proof, guys. NBA players play back-to-backs. These pussies can't handle it. And it's, I'm also saying this in the aspect where there's always load of management and all that shit. Continue. My apologies for interrupting you.
Basically, it's a lot of games, and then also at the same time, they don't have enough depth. What I mean by that, it's not that they don't have players. The squad has players. The thing is that they don't have enough good players to cause a change. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, he could throw a body out there, but that body is not going to do anything.
Definitely.
So, yeah, and literally, like, Man U, that first goal that they concede is because, once again, Dalot is not good at defending. He's very good at forward runs as a right back, but he's bad at defending. The first and the goal comes from him pressing way too high. He's pressing way too high, and he leaves the left winger alone. All they do, as soon as he's pressing high, they pass the ball to the left winger. Left winger comes in, boom, scores the first goal.
Yeah.
And I was like, when I went down 1-0, I was like, all right, like, we could come back from this. But then the way they played in the second half, they played horrible, bro. Horrible. Like, the most horrible thing I've ever seen. Like, through this whole entire season, where I was like, what? You guys don't even look like the team I've been watching.
Yeah.
It don't look like... I think the other thing, too, is that it's fatigue, it's partying, because you beat Barcelona. Then you beat Newcastle and you get the Carabao Cup. So you just beat Barcelona and you just won your first trophy. And then you got to go play Liverpool. You know, and it's like, man, it was bad.
How many games are left in the Premier League for you guys?
If I'm not mistaken, we still have, I think, like 12 or 13 left.
12 and 13. Then in the
But that's aside from the Europa. Yeah. It's aside from the FA Cup.
Europa League, for example, what's right now?
We're in the round
16 or what?
The round of 16 right now.
Okay, so there's a lot of football left to play, basically.
Yeah.
And Manchester United is no longer for sale. From what I last heard.
Not from my understanding.
Because I had seen something where
today?
Like the American owners were like, they're not going to sell the team anymore.
No. So what they were saying is that if their demands of how much they want aren't met, they won't sell.
Hmm.
That's probably what you're referring to.
Okay, because I had seen something where something like that.
So right now, officially, there was three bids, from my understanding. There was three bids that came in. And after that, whatever bid they accepted, then they would get a chance to look at all the internal stuff, right? Like, all right, if you're really serious about proceeding, now we're going to show you all the internal paperwork, all the internal stuff in order for you to actually purchase. So right now they're in the second stage of the negotiation, from my understanding, and it's with the billionaire, the richest billionaire from England. And then
Sir James Arthur Ratcliffe.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a British billionaire, chemical engineer. He owns this company called INEOS.
The issue with him, though, is that he also owns Nice, which is a French club.
Mm.
So I don't know how that's going to work out. Like, you already own a football club, and then you're trying to get, you know, one of the top football clubs.
Wasn't it the same deal with the Qatarians because they own PSG?
No, it's different because with the Qataris, it's a specific group that owns PSG. Mm-hmm. If right now it's a guy that he's going to own it privately. It's not a group.
Mm.
So yes, it's from the same country, but it's an individual that will own them if he goes through. And then his net worth, just his, it's they were saying supposedly like 355 or 335 billion or whatever.
Yeah, right here I'm seeing that from sportingnews.com they're hoping to get something close to 5 billion for the club.
Yeah, that's what they want. Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, so right but now if you it's, think it's about basically it, between those two people though, between Ratcliffe and the Qatari.
If you think about it, bro, like they literally like they're going to make such a huge gain by selling the club.
The Glazers? Yeah, because they probably bought it for half of that.
No.
How much they buy it for?
They bought it for less, my guy. They literally got a loan and investors. They only put in 600K of their money.
But the whole sale for the club was how much?
Back in the day, I think it was for less than a billion, bro, back in the day.
So but that's what I'm saying. So the Glazer family like, has had control of the team for how long?
Since 2006, I want to say.
Okay. Almost 20 years.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're going to make a lot of money back if they...
Because that was their initial investment of 600K. Mm-hmm. And they stayed the majority owners throughout all this time. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But well. See, that was the dad. The dad is the one that did all those moves.
Well. Well, that was football. Now let's talk about football. Something interesting happened today. I mean, it only really affects one of us here.
Oh, you got Carr?
Derek Carr.
Cara de Mierda, yes, sir. This was especially kind of
with the Saints. Now?
This was kind of already foreseen, just because
that was the first team he actually, the first team that met up with him before. He met up with the Jets.
Yeah, well, basically the Raiders gave the Saints permission for them to meet because he was still under contract when the Saints first met with him, and then the Raiders cut him.
And yeah, then, I found it interesting how, like...
you know?
We didn't have to trade for him.
The Raiders already knew. And I think that at some point... I think that whatever those two meetings he had with the Saints, I think they both liked what they saw from each other to the point where he was like, you know, if they have to trade for Derek Carr, it was going to deplete what Derek Carr is going to work with. A lot of people are saying, like, oh, like, Derek Carr is, like, you know, past his prime, whatever you want to put it. For me personally, Derek Carr, the way I analyze it is this way. What happened with the Raiders, a lot of stuff happened with the Raiders in the last, 5 to 6 years? Yes. They changed the city they play in. They changed their coach that was doing really good, actually. He got injured. They brought in Marshawn Lynch. A lot of stuff happened like that. They lost Khalil Mack, which, he's not an offensive player, but it just, you stir the culture and the locker room and all that type of stuff to the point where, you know, it affects the play of a quarterback like Derek Carr. And if I'm not mistaken, this current coach for the Saints, Byron?
Mr. Dennis Allen?
Was he there when Jack Del Rio was there?
Jack Del Rio, correct me if I'm wrong, he was the defensive coach, right?
Or Jack Del Rio was the head coach of the Raiders.
Because I know
before John Gruden.
I know Dennis Allen was the coach of the Raiders for, if it wasn't for a year, it was for 2 years. And then he got cut.
So he wasn't.
But I think that was before.
He wasn't the offensive coordinator for the Raiders.
I'm not quite too sure, but I know he was the head coach.
Yeah, he was the head coach 2012 to 2014.
Yeah, two seasons, right?
Yeah.
Then he got cut.
So that's where that connection comes from.
Yep.
And around those times is when, you know, I think it was probably when Carr was having probably his better seasons and whatnot. So, and then, you know, so he's getting a fresh start.
And then not only that, bro, he's also like, he's hopping off to the NFC side. So he has a better chance.
Especially with the division, too. The division's not as strong.
Yeah, you know, division, good. That's a good, you know, thing to point out, that he'll get out of the division, and then he'll have a better probability of making it in the Super Bowl in this conference compared to the AFC, because AFC, stacked. You know, hella stacked, man.
You know, and then that's that the Broncos
with the Mahomes,
just too,
with the, just with added the Herberts, to their, you know? With the Wilsons, with the Josh Allens, you know?
Yeah, you know, and also too, I feel like he's coming to a team that still has a good running game.
Yep.
Has offensive pieces to make him look good, and then on the defense they don't have a bad defense either. So hopefully this is the piece that the Saints need,
yes, sir.
Because they're looking at their coach that's now on the AFC side, their former coach at least, and is like, okay, what's going on here? You know, so the NFL season is looking interesting.
It's the first chess move when it comes to the quarterbacks. Yeah. What else falls falls upon this?
Yeah, we'll see what happens, man. Something that's another sport that's kind of starting to come back is baseball.
Yeah.
And the Dodgers were going to throw Gavin Lux out there for shortstop, you know, to have like the hefty role of that. And he tears his ACL.
Yeah, I seen that it was in no contact, right? He was running towards third base.
Yeah. And then luckily they just got this other guy. I think his last name is Rojas. And he's a shortstop.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just, it's going to put more of a burden on him. But now, in a sense, the Dodgers have to be on a lookout for a shortstop because that's such a crucial position that's needed. And now that we don't have, what was his name? Trey Turner?
Oh, yeah, Trey Turner.
Yeah, Trey Turner. He was the shortstop, you know, for us. So now that he's gone, it's you know, Rojas is going to be the guy. Gavin Lux is supposed to be the guy, but now it's Rojas. Man, oh, man. But that's the Dodgers for us. Lakers, don't break a heart. Till next time.
Oh, yeah, guys, don't forget to spring your times warp.
Oh, that's true. Turn your clocks, because on Saturday we're about to lose an hour.
Yeet.
Horrible.